This is F1 Debrief. Bring back the Dumbaflugel. Coming up this week, we discuss just the tiniest bit of politics and silly season rumours, talk about the race, and plug Sidepod Radio.
Text from Ryan in... we'll just go on to a quick tweet we've got here. It's one for Holly. It's sidepodcast@5liveF1. Holly, question for you. It says, how does she go about finding drivers after they finish their race? And is it a fight to speak to them first? They're all rushed to see you, Holly. They're always asking for you, aren't they?
They're all what, sorry?
They're always rushing to see you and looking for you, aren't they?
If only. After a race, it used to be quite a battle, actually, to try and speak to the drivers. But the FIA came up with this new initiative this year where when the top three drivers come in, obviously they go up to the podium. The other 17 drivers all come to an area, kind of holding area, where all the press are allowed to speak to them. Quite similar to MotoGP in a certain way. And it's just great. You literally pick off all the drivers that you need to speak to very, very quickly. Some of them, as you heard at the German Grand Prix, like Rubens Barrichello, was very, you know, they get very upset straight after a race. So you tend to get quite good interviews. But just on a sideline, Rubens Barrichello turned up for the meeting yesterday morning with a Mr. Happy t-shirt, which I thought was very good. But yes, usually side podcast people, thank you for emailing in and texting in, and tweeting in rather. It's quite easy to get it. And after the press conferences, we speak to the top three drivers. So yeah, nicely set up and organised.
Best shout out ever?
Good week, bad week.
It's been a good week for Cosworth engine users as the company has promised their engine will be competitive. I didn't realise that initially they'd been offered the chance to run their engines at 20,000 RPM rather than the regulation 18 in order to help them be competitive. But now they've turned that offer down and they still think they'll be okay.
That was the original suggestion for the when we had the two-tier system that was just a terrible, terrible, terrible idea. However, I do not believe for one second that they can be competitive out of the box with an 18,000 RPM engine. I do not think that they're going to have the ability or the capacity to do that. However, we shall see.
It's always good to be proved wrong. It's been a bad week for Williams as the team found themselves in a legal dispute the minute they set foot on Hungarian soil. There's a clothing company of the same name who have the rights to sell clothing with the Williams name on, so the team couldn't sell any of their merchandise in Hungary. The team uniform is supplied to employees at no charge, though, so they were allowed to continue with their usual race attire, no problem.
It could have been embarrassing.
Yeah, what would they have worn? They'd have all looked like the Stig.
I would have liked to have seen that. I love these little arguments. We had Force India at the last race nearly having their motorhome removed from them.
Yeah.
And now Williams nearly had to do pit stops in the nude.
It's been a good week for Renault fans as the team are opening their doors for a factory open day on the 12th of August. It's in partnership with the Motorsport Industry Association for the National Motorsport Week. And I checked the site this afternoon. It says it's fully booked. If you manage to get tickets, let us know because we'll want to hear all about your day at the Renault factory.
I'm not too sure after this afternoon's news whether or not I want to spend too much time at the Renault factory.
It might be an angry place.
Luckily, we haven't got tickets. But it, like Christine said, if you have got them, we want pictures and we want descriptions and we want to know all about it. And I do hope, fingers crossed, that the team are not in the midst of a big battle with the FIA at the time.
It's been a bad week for Valencia's image as the airport authorities have promised to increase security after there have been a few thefts in the area. The FIA security chief has actually written to the teams to warn them of thefts in the airport and at the exit and suggest they take extra precautions. I recommend massive bodyguards.
That's a bit worrying. That's an unusual course of action, and it doesn't sell going to the race very well at all, especially in the light of the fact there was basically nobody at Hungary this weekend. And not only is Valencia not the best and most exciting race on the calendar, but if you go there, you might get mugged.
News and views.
I know it's news and views, but can we talk about qualifying yet?
No.
I want to talk about qualifying.
Not yet. We've still got all this politics to talk
about. Oh, you sell it to me so well.
Yeah. Well, you know how I sort of hate Formula One at the moment?
Yes.
Well,
it has been Ruben in the comments that you're not exactly overawed with the season as it's been thus far.
Yeah. Well, guess what? Alonso agrees with me.
What's he got to say for himself?
Well, David Tremaine wrote in The Independent. So I guess we have to do this with a bit of...
You've got a black top on.
I do.
Perfect.
Alonso says, this is the worst Formula One we've had in many years, maybe the worst in history, because of the politics and all of the fights. We need to find a solution as soon as possible. These 6 months, they have been very bad for Formula One.
I'd agree with that. That's
100%. Can we blow that up massively and put it on the wall?
No,
please?
Because I'm not encouraging you to be negative any longer. I'm enjoying, or I've started to enjoy Formula One in the last week and a bit.
Is it because you spoke to Joe?
Well, have to say, I was talking to Joe before, on a side with Joe this week, and he did lighten my mood on the entire politics thing a little, because as he pointed out, thus far, the politics have been dragging the sport into disrepute with the FIA and FOTA bitching and arguing over the tiniest little details. But now, although it's not sorted and we're not out of the woods yet, what we've got is a straight fight between Ari and Todd, and maybe some other candidates if they decide to step forward. But what we've got is politics doing politics.
It's not at all related to what's happening on track. No, it just is
not,
politics.
It's not politics interfering it's an election. With the racing. And you've got driver contracts up for renewal. You've got things like sponsors at least, you know, able to look at Formula One and consider whether or not they want to take part in next year. And there is a hope that there will be a next year now, which is good. And the politics
that's progress.
that's as much as we ask right now. And I completely understand why you're fed up with the whole thing, because it has been utterly miserable. Formula One has not been great. You know, we've been having a great season on track, but off track, it's, you know, the mud sinking has not been fun at all. However, I am optimistic that we are through the worst and it can only get better.
There are still stupid things happening, though, like this whole plane business, because Vatanen complained about the fact the FIA may have been helping Jean Todt with his campaign because he and his girlfriend were flying all over the world in an FIA paid for chartered jet. That's what he said. And they said, actually, it's because his partner, Michelle Yeoh, was travelling to support the Make Road Safe campaign, and it just so happened that Jean Todt was there to meet all these FIA people. That's just the way it goes.
Yeah, I was a little bit, I mean, I read the headline and just thought this is pathetic, but that, again, that is politics being politics, and people, there will be lots and lots of mudslinging for the next, leading up to October, but it will be political based, and hopefully the sport won't get dragged into it.
Jean Todt says he hopes that the election will be carried out in a fair way, maintaining the integrity of the FIA.
Right. When does that ever happen in any political circles? And when does that ever happen in Formula One circles? That's ridiculous. What a stupid statement to say. And do you really think that that man is whiter than white?
So like you said, driver contracts are all up in the air at the moment, except for Webber, who agreed a new one-year deal with Red Bull. Has Vettel got a deal with them too?
Next year.
They both signed up for next year now?
I think they have both. They have the driver contracts in place for next year.
Sorted.
Good for Red Bull. I mean, Horner was saying earlier this week that he thought it was the best lineup, and I would kind of struggle to disagree with him there. That is a great lineup they've got at Red Bull.
They've got lots of experience, and they've got all the excitement and youth of Vettel as well.
It's a great partnership, and the guys seem to get along. I would be slightly worried that Webber's contract isn't longer, though. Just 1 year.
Yeah, they're just taking it a year at a time,
doesn't
I guess.
Doesn't say to me, we have faith in this driver and he is the future of the team. What it says to me is, well, we'll give him another go and see how he goes next year.
I do think at the time, there were other press things where Christian Horner seemed to be a bit miffed that Webber hadn't told him everything about his accident. He was like, we didn't realise he'd broken his shoulder as well.
That's true. But he told us, which was nice of Webber to do that. He let Sobogas know before he let his team boss.
Also, for Red Bull, there's always constant rumours that Sebastian Loeb would switch to
I
F1.
I like these rumours. Let's have more of these, please.
But he doesn't think it's going to happen. He said, I'm keen to sign a contract with Citroën for rallying, and that's the only negotiation that I'm having at the moment. It would be a pleasure to drive an F1, but I don't know if I'm able to do that or not.
I think it would be a great marketing exercise, and conveniently, the World Rally Championship season finishes before the Formula One season ends, and therefore there will be space for him to jump into a seat, even if it's only for one race, even if he doesn't intend to race next year. I think it'll be good headlines for Red Bull, and they can get a lot of marketing out of it, and then sell more of their fizzy drink cans.
Obviously, the big switcheroo happened this week with Bourdais out and not Seb in.
Yep.
And Buemi said, basically, he's completely ready to lead the team now.
He's only been, how many races has he done now? How can he be ready to lead the team?
Well, actually,
he's only been here 5 minutes.
The Autosport headline says Buemi ready to lead Toro Rosso, but he doesn't actually say that. He said Bourdais is now gone, so it will be different. Before, I was the rookie, and now I must lead the team. He's still a rookie, though.
Yeah, he's still his rookie season, and he's still got an awful lot to learn. I guess when you've got Algie, what's his name, in your other car, you've got no choice but to lead. I don't get the impression that guy is a born leader, though. Do you?
Well, I think it's really difficult to lead a team whilst you're still learning, but I guess that's the risk you take with signing up all these rookies.
That's true. I would suggest that SJR probably need a leader, and maybe they made a bit of a mistake bringing in such a young guy so soon and having Buemi being the leader.
They sort of need to emulate what Red Bull are doing with one older driver.
A perfect setup.
And one a younger one. So with Bourdais gone, all the attention turns to Piquet and when he's going to go out, and he has admitted finally that his contract may not last till the end of the season. He said, it's not 100% settled for the rest. That's why I'm going to do my job and let my father do the rest.
Right.
He's going to get his dad on you.
On Flav, by the sign of it. Yeah. Well, PK Senior has been doing a wonderful job of keeping PK Junior in a seat all season against the most unbelievable odds. And I don't think he's ready to give up just yet. So it wouldn't surprise me to see PK last like the rest of this season.
He has been doing a bit better. I don't think he spun at all this weekend. So that's progress.
We will talk about it later, but Flav was seen leaving the Grand Prix circuit particularly early whilst PK was still out and about on the circuit. Yeah. So you get the impression that whilst he may remain, it won't be with Flav's blessing. It won't be encouraged by Flav to have the guy around for much longer.
The race.
Now, can we talk about qualifying?
Not quite yet.
Oh, yes, we can. Come on, it's the section.
No, almost. I just wanted to point out that in free practice, Not Seb produced a painful installation lap.
That was fun.
It was seconds, was like 10 seconds off the pace.
That seems like a very long time ago, but that was a hell of an out lap. Is it the first time he's ever turned a corner in a Formula 1 car?
I think it must be.
I think Dank said that the guy he was due to have a little bit of straight line testing before he arrived at this race. But pretty much, they stuck him in a car and they sent him out on the circuit and he got round. He came back in one piece, albeit slightly off the pace.
10 seconds off the pace. I mean, that is slow. He picked it up straight away, you know.
We were watching it live, obviously, because we watch free practice every Friday. And in the comments, it was just funny. Still going around. He's still out there. It just looked terrible to watch. The poor guy.
Now we can talk about qualifying. But I have lots of questions for you about it.
Go on.
So question one, why are the BMWs so freakishly slow?
Well, Mario said earlier this week that they were on top of the issues. They knew what was going on. They were aware of what needed to be fixed. And there are rumours abound that there's going to be a big upgrade coming in Singapore. Now, technically, that's pretty much the end of the season. It's certainly the back end of the season.
Heidfeld is pinning his hopes on that update.
Yeah.
And I can't remember who it was, but someone in the comments was like, doesn't he know that's in September?
It does.
Months away.
It makes you wonder why they bother with the travel expenses and they just don't stay at home. I hate to say it, and it's very harsh to say, but that is a pathetic attempt from BMW. Look at the improvements that McLaren have been making. Look at the improvements that Ferrari have managed to make. And what have BMW actually achieved in their major update? They've already had one major update this year. Plenty of other small things. New things were arriving at this track, going nowhere.
My second question is, how would Bourdais have done? Because the team have new parts on the car. And Buemi did really well. He qualified 11th.
Well, it's a major upgrade. They have supposedly Red Bull parts, new parts of the rear end that made Red Bull that much quicker, and they've arrived for Toro Rosso. So it's a shame that Bourdais couldn't get the most out of them, and I think he said that at the point he was leaving. He didn't, you know, he wanted to come back for this race and see what the upgrades did. But when we made the most of them, though, it was a great qualifying lap from him, and it was an incredible effort given how bad the Toro Rosso have managed to do with such superior equipment this year.
Yeah, Not Seb was doing pretty well, but he had an engine failure, so he qualified last, which was quite disappointing, but at least it wasn't his mistake, because some people have been a bit down on his entrance to Formula 1, thinking he's a bit young.
All of the drivers were pressured, I would say, from the media into saying some negative comments about poor little Algie. Tim, as we like to call him, around side podcast parts.
For reasons unknown. Particularly, Massa said he was too young for F1 and it wouldn't be good for him. But then Vettel defended him, which doesn't make sense because Vettel came in really young as well.
Yeah, that does. I mean, Alonso came in quite young, but he was at a smaller team. Vettel came in young. Massa, I think Massa's point was that when he started, it was too early for him. All the drivers are correct in the sense that if you come in too early and you get it wrong, it could destroy your career. It happened to Yuji Ide. He came in, and mind you, he'd probably never be ready. Thinking about it, but he certainly came in young and he certainly came in inexperienced and he paid the price for it. So there is a danger that when you accept a Formula 1 drive that, you know, you're not ready for it and it damages you in the long term, because people tend not to forget these things and then they tend to bring them up at every possible opportunity.
Don't know who that would be.
Not a clue.
I mean, the good thing is that Not Seb did really well. He did all right. And in the race, I know we haven't got there yet, but he didn't mess up his first pit stop either, so that's always good.
That's what all eyes were on the guy. We were expecting him to fail. It was really a question of when's he going to spin first, when's he going to crash first, will it be him or will it be PK? All these question marks were over his head during this weekend. The guy's got a lot of bottle to get in the car and go out there competitively and try and, you know, make the most of it. And I thought he did really well. Keith Marshall in the comments has backed that up. He thought he did a really good job too. I don't think anybody out there begrudges the job that Not Seb did.
Okay, my third question is, how's Massa?
At the time of going live, doing okay, I think is the word, is the best way of describing it.
Stable, I think they say.
And being monitored as we speak. Everybody's keeping their eye on him. He's in the best possible place, under the best possible care, and everything is being done to help his condition. Obviously, we should say, for anyone who has missed it and did miss it, the guy had a huge accident during qualifying.
Yeah, he was... Barrichello was going around the circuit and a bit fell off the back of his car.
A big bit.
A big spring thing. And it bounced along the track and it hit Massa in the head.
Caught his helmet.
Yeah. And so that obviously rendered him unable to drive the car.
Yes.
And he crashed into the barriers. But obviously the tyre crash wasn't really a problem. It was the impact.
It was the spring catching Massa that was the major problem. In terms of the car hitting the barriers, most of the the safety cell and most of the things that should have looked after the guy appear to have worked. So that's a good thing for safety in terms of, there was a huge, he hit the barrier full on. Didn't look like he slowed down at all. I think possibly his reactions hit the brakes and the accelerator at the same time. But basically everything that was in place to stop drivers injuring themselves worked. It's just that there was no way of stopping an open cockpit. A driver in an open cockpit car getting hit on the head, as we saw a couple of weeks ago in Formula 2.
Well, yeah, everyone is saying it's very, very similar to the accident with Henry Surtees. But the thing is, they are both quite freak accidents, and it really is a coincidence.
Well, we should commend Formula 1, I think, because when Surtees went off, he was obviously knocked unconscious in the car, and he went straight into a barrier that I don't believe had any kind of protection. It was just basically a solid barrier, and that didn't help the situation. It may not have been the problem. The tyre probably was the big issue in that accident. However, Formula One safety does appear to be, as good as it possibly could be. Should just point out, we've just been watching a great interview with Rob Smedley, your favourite, on the BBC. And he mentioned that the Ferrari guys haven't had an awful lot of sleep. And I think
he used the phrase cream crackered.
That's a good way of describing it.
Yeah.
And I think there was a comment from Alex yesterday. I might have been today. I get confused where we are. It's been a very long weekend. But he said that there was mistakes happening today in Formula 1 that we wouldn't have expected to happen. And he wondered if the fact that a lot of people in Formula 1 haven't been sleeping too well this weekend as a result of everything that's been going on. And I suspect that Ferrari should be commended for what they did today, because it sounds like they're all exhausted. But our thoughts do go out to Felipe. We hope he makes a speedy recovery, because we love him to pieces. We really do like Massa.
Absolutely.
He's a good chap. He's a nice driver. And we all our thoughts are with him.
I think my next question will lighten the mood somewhat. Question 4. Who's to blame for the massive FOM failure?
My favourite bit of the weekend.
It was amazing.
It was an event that we'll talk about for a very long time to come, I'm sure. We'll remember where we were and what we were doing the day that live timing failed in the biggest possible way. How many times in the past have we criticised FOM live timing for not refreshing, not updating, dying on us,
showing hieroglyphics, all kinds of things?
Utterly, genuinely is an awful system. There's no doubt about it. It needs a revamp. Formula One live timing sucks. It's official. And finally, FOM were embarrassed, I think, by what happened in qualifying. I loved it to pieces, obviously, but not particularly good for Bernie and his team.
No, I mean, qualifying probably would have been as exciting as normal, except we were all a bit worried about Massa, obviously, because he was in the medical centre at the time. And so in the last minute, the live timing just conked out completely. No one knew anything. We didn't know. The teams, the drivers, no one knew what was going on. They were all asking each other what time they'd posted. It was good, though, because we got to see the drivers talking to each other.
Yes, we got to see drivers completely completely out of the depth. Not happened, as far as I recall, in a very long time. They had on their car backup transponders, which will tell them their time, but only their time, and the teams would have told them their teammates' time if there were two cars in the top 10. Beyond that, utterly clueless.
It is interesting how reliant we are on the actual timing and the technology behind it, because it really screwed everything up. No one knew what was going on, and then the BBC coverage had to stop because they'd run out of time, because obviously there was a delay for the Massa thing anyway.
It was already overrunning.
So they had to stop before anyone actually knew who was on pole.
That's rather unfortunate. And you could see when Bernie came down, he invaded the weighing session with the drivers, because he knew he had to get this sorted out. He knew there was no time to figure out what was going on and have a chat about it.
He knew he had to show his face.
Yeah, he said, look, this has to be sorted now. And I think he panicked a little bit because TV was about to go off air. It was a strange session. All in all, it was a memorable session. Live comment, we've got people commenting from all over the world. We're great. It's a great community to watch every session. And we knew that nobody anywhere on this planet knew who got pole.
Okay, my last question for qualifying is, why was Alonso running late to get pole? Because we're not in Spain.
No, that's a damn good question. I would imagine, and I'm only guessing, that this circuit would lend itself to the fat-nosed Renault, and therefore they want to get the best performance that they can from a track that suits them. However, Journey has just linked to a post from Joe Sayward on his blog, joesayward.wordpress.com, and it suggests that the Renault team may be in the process of being sold to a wealthy man from Russia, somebody called Alshir Usmanov.
Ooh, good one.
Alshir Usmanov. I think I've pronounced that right. I've literally just read it for the first time about 5 minutes ago. First time I've heard of the guy. And it's all news to us. It's literally rolling breaking news as we record this show.
It doesn't make sense to me because the Renault pole, he was really, really light. I mean, he had about half the fuel of the rest of them. And it was really close. I mean, it wasn't like he was so far ahead because he was so light. It was really close to Webber.
He had
so
to pull it off, and he did.
Anyone that knows anything about Formula One knows he wasn't going to win.
Yeah, I don't think this guy, this potential buyer, knows anything about Formula One by the look of it. It looks like he knows a little bit about football, potentially, and that's about all. So no doubt they were just trying to get the best possible deal they could before they sold it, which we're going to talk about the other thing in a minute to do with Renault, but I think that might affect them just a little bit in that quest.
I think that really it wasn't that good a race today, but then it was Hungary, so I wasn't expecting much either.
Compared to qualifying, it didn't live up to the hype, did it? I preferred Saturday, and to be honest with you, I almost preferred Friday. I nearly said Friday there, and I think I probably did. Friday was good, Saturday was brilliant, Sunday was meh.
Yeah, there was none of the usual battles that you see all the way through the field. Like, even if where we've said recently Braun have been running away with it or no one can catch Red Bull, there's been lots to watch down the field. Not so much today.
Midfield battles have made this season, actually. If you look in terms of what made the good races, it's the battles for the lower points paying positions. However, we didn't even have that today. We had a lot of queues, which is, it's expected at Hungary. And the Kurs cars held up the non-Kurs cars, which again was expected, and nobody wanted the McLarens to get in front of them and hold them up. So, to be honest with you, it played out almost how we expected it. It's just that Saturday was so good, and it really, qualifying really is the best part of the Formula One weekend. There is no doubt about that. The race played out in such a predictable way.
Yeah.
There wasn't an awful lot of excitement, especially after Alonso was out after his very first short stint.
Well, yeah, I mean, that basically handed the race to Hamilton, who, I mean, he was his usual awesome self, and you know, took it completely, worked very hard, didn't make a mistake at all.
He did what I thought he was going to do at the last race before Webber punctured his tyre, which is get to the front of the field and keep out of the way.
Run away with it.
Yeah. So it was a great drive from Hamilton, and I'm just stunned at the ability of McLaren to turn around a poor car, because pre-season that car didn't look like it was ever going to start a race, let alone win one.
It was nice at the end. Firstly, it was nice that we knew who'd won, rather than qualifying where no one knew anything.
Yeah.
But it was nice that Whitmarsh and Hamilton, they were both thanking each other a lot. So it wasn't just like a one-way thing, like, I've done such a good race or anything.
Sure.
They were really, it was really a team effort.
And I think Whitmarsh deserves to be up there. It was the first time as a team boss that he got to stand up and collect the trophy. And that's good. We'd like to see more of that, I think.
There were three potential penalties today, because right at the start, Raikkonen came barging his way through the field. I think he bounced off. I think he just missed Hamilton and bounced off Vettel.
Yeah, he did a Webber.
Yeah.
I think that's the best way of describing it. Although this time the stewards made the correct decision. They called it a racing incident, which it was.
Yeah, they did decide to look at it after the race, which
controversial.
Is slightly different to what
stupid,
they did last time.
Annoying, frustrating, a waste of time.
Yeah.
Stop me, please, because what is going on? What was different between what happened to Kimi, to what happened with Webber? It looked like exactly the same incident, and they were happy to make the call during the race in Germany, and suddenly now they're not prepared to do that, not going to stick their neck out and make a call. What's going on? Why are they just, how come they can just sit there and actually, you know, we'll do it later. Forget making any decisions during the race. We'll sit down and have a nice cup of tea. We'll just figure it all out
we'll
when it's
later.
Over and done.
Yeah.
How come they have the right to be this lazy? I don't understand.
It's weird. But Webber didn't go unnoticed, because in the pit lane he was released into the path of Kimi, and they managed to avoid each other, but it was a bit of a dangerous,
it was a very, very poor call from the Red Bull lollipop guy. And we saw later in the race what a good call should look like when Lewis's lollipop guy held Lewis for a little bit longer, actually I would say arguably longer than necessary, just to be sure that he didn't get released in the path of a Williams. And that's exactly what Red Bull should have done and decided not to.
Afterwards, they were just reprimanded, though. There was no particular penalties given. So the big penalty fell to Renault, who basically ruined their race.
They ruined, yeah, absolutely. Despite having a fantastic strategy that saw Alonso get pole, he had to run away with the first stint, and he didn't manage to do that because of a problem with his fuel pressure. I think he had to make some adjustments on the steering wheel. He didn't have great pace in the first stint, which he needed to pull away from the field and to make his three-stop strategy work. But when he came into the pits, major fail on the front right wheel.
Yeah, I mean, watching the replays, even when he was pulling out of his pit stop, the wheel wasn't right.
Yeah.
And so the wheel fairing was spinning off, and halfway around the track, it flew off.
Dangerous.
And then a few seconds later, the entire wheel came off, bounced.
Really dangerous.
Bounced across the grass and came to rest by the barrier.
Yeah. It could have been more serious. And to be honest with you, Alonso possibly should have been told to pull over. And it doesn't sound like the team required him to do that. They didn't make the ready call to say, you've got a very dangerous front wheel and you need to slow down or pull off the racing line or basically stop your car.
Well, that's what the stewards say, that they didn't bother to tell him, and he could have pulled off, but he didn't know, obviously. And letting him out of the pit lane with a dodgy wheel in the first place is bad. So at the moment, it looks like Renault are suspended from the Valencian race.
Controversial,
now,
that call.
They have appealed.
Which they have the right to do.
Which
fair
they,
enough.
Yeah, absolutely. But
given that there's a long break before Valencia, presumably that means the hearing can be heard.
I guess
would imagine.
So.
Again, this is another breaking news story, and we're rolling with it. I don't know whether or not the FIA have responded to the request for an appeal.
I don't know how lucky they will get with that, though, because from what the FIA say, they've broken all kinds of regulations.
It's a major fail for Renault, generally. It's a bad call from the pit lane to not tell him that the front wheel was not put on correctly, because surely the person in charge of the front wheel should have known that the car was released before he was ready. Alonso said that it feels like a puncture, and they should have known and been able to tell him that, and they haven't tried to do that. On the other hand, we've only got the FIA's side of the story on this one, so it is a bit of a harsh decision, if only because Alonso won't be able to race in his own Grand Prix.
Yeah, there is that, but I don't think it's harsh, because they did it all wrong, and the wheel was bouncing off, and that is really dangerous.
They picked a bad weekend to have a wheel go bouncing off down the track, didn't they?
Well, yeah, especially at the moment.
A couple of weekends ago, possibly, we'd have been more sympathetic to their plight. However, right now, we don't want to see anything flying off of any car in any direction, and therefore, I guess we feel a little bit more strongly about that. There is a rumour going around. There's lots of rumours in the comments, which we probably should talk about, but I don't know if there's any justification behind it. But they're obviously Massa is not going to be in Valencia. It's a couple of weeks away, but it's unlikely he's going to make any kind of recovery in time for that race. So you're going to have a Ferrari without a driver in Valencia, and you're going to have an Alonso.
A Spaniard without a seat.
Without a car. And so there is the speculation that possibly there may be a move to maybe drag Alonso over for one race or maybe a little bit earlier if the rumours that he will go to Ferrari next year are true.
Yeah, I don't think there is anything to base that on yet, except for the constant rumours that he's going to go there. And I guess we're all thinking maybe he'll do that sooner rather than later.
I can see Bernie jumping in. I cannot believe for one second that Mr. Eccleston will let the only person that Spain are interested in not be there for his home Grand Prix. We saw how the mood dropped significantly. I think, was it last year in Valencia, after Alonso, he was out within the first couple of laps.
Yeah.
And people were leaving and going home, and they were sort of downbeat and upset. And so Alonso needs to be there, because that's what the Spanish fans want, and that's the only way they're going to tune into their televisions. It's the only way they're going to turn up at the racetrack. I mean, it's going to be desolate there if Alonso isn't allowed to race in some form.
It's not like Ferrari have a lot of people to choose from, though, because they've got their two test drivers who haven't driven for a long time.
Yep.
But they don't have a pool of young drivers or anything, not in the same way that Red Bull do.
Well, that's true. I mean, Stephen Daniels in the comments says he thinks Genet will get it. That's one of Ferrari's test drivers. You've got Badoa, who hasn't driven a wheel in Anglia for, 10 years?
And that's
wasn't
quite a long time.
Wasn't very good when he did. So, I mean, there's lots of speculation about who it could be. And if you're in the comments, do let us know what you think will happen. I just think that Mr. Bernie Eccleston will lend a hand to somebody to make something happen. And you know, I'm not saying that anything untoward will happen. I just think that I don't believe that Alonso will just sit out the weekend, especially as it's Valencia.
In the comments, Journey has just found some more information from Joe. We love Joe.
And we love Journey.
Yeah, it says, it remains to be seen when the Court of Appeal will be convened, but with the European holidays now kicking in, it's unlikely that this will happen before the end of August. Thus, one can expect to see Renault racing in Valencia, but it could then be left out of one of the following Grand Prix, probably the Italian race.
Ah,
so
interesting.
That would solve all the problems.
That would be brilliant. And welcome to Rolling News with Sci Podcast.
There was an interesting moment in the race because Hamilton got past Webber like really easily, and we all thought, oh yeah, he's got the Kurs on board, so that probably explains it. But then Kovalainen got stuck behind Webber and couldn't get past, and he's got Kurs as well, so what was going on there?
And he's got the same car as Lewis Hamilton.
Got all the updates.
There was talk that Lewis had a special wing on Saturday morning, but the wing didn't work, and apparently he chose not to use it. So therefore, they had identical cars, and we were saying how well Kovi did when he had a lesser car than Lewis at the last race, and now they had identical cars. Not a stellar performance. He played the role of Vettel, the role that Vettel's held pretty much all this year, which is to find a car and to sit behind him the whole race and do nothing about it. And he did that with, I think it was Webber he sat behind, and we thought he'd make a move on the guy. He had a couple of looks, never really grabbed the race by the throat and did anything about it, has to be said. And
he didn't do anything wrong either.
No, but not at all. He didn't drive badly, but his teammate won the race, and Heikki came, what did he finish, fifth place. So not an impressive showing from the car that's been improved greatly.
We did think that maybe this race would be better for the Braun cars because obviously the hot temperatures and the windy track and everything, it seemed like it would be more their style.
Qualifying didn't play into their hands.
They didn't qualify particularly well, and Jensen seemed to be having quite a nightmare. He was on the radio constantly complaining about
filling
the tires.
This is the driver who is he's a smooth driver. He's light on his tires, and he's driving a car which is known to be light on its tires. Somehow it was eating up anything they threw at it, and I'm not entirely sure what's going wrong. I don't know how the Braun team have managed to lose their way in such a spectacular fashion. Everything that McLaren have gained, Braun have managed to lose in almost equal measure.
There was one moment when Button was on the radio and he was saying, how can this car have gone so wrong? We were thinking the exact same thing.
It's not the monster that he drove to win in Monaco, and Ryan Rossi drove it and said it was impressive. It's unfortunately all gone wrong for the team. And Rubens Barrichello had an even worse race, finishing in 10th place. Jensen finished 7th and Rubens ended up in 10th after a very unspectacular start and not much of a charge through the field.
Well, we thought Rubens might be one stopping because he went quite long, and then it looked like he was going to get in front of Button, but then he came into the pits again.
Yeah,
so we were wrong.
Bad strategy calls, and nothing went right. I tipped Button for a really good run and potential to win earlier today, and nothing like that happened. He didn't. The temperature fell in his direction. Everything should have worked the way it was supposed to work. I guess the dirty track hurt them a little bit, and it took a while for it to rubber in, but still not impressive. And they're beginning to throw away their championship advantage at the moment. I think it does look like game on, despite the fact that the Vettel didn't even finish the race.
Well, Webber's taking over that role now.
Yeah.
He's catching up.
Is Webber in the lead for the first time this season?
Above Vettel.
Yeah, I believe that might be the case. Mike Webber is number one guy in that team at the moment, and he's taking the fight to Braun. And certainly in championship, in constructors' terms, their lead is being eroded. Just looking down the running order, obviously Tim was the youngest driver.
Don't
to
call
ever.
Him Tim.
Yeah, it's Tim.
No, it's not Tim.
He's the first, Jaime Tim Alguersuari was the first driver, or was the youngest driver to ever compete in a Grand Prix this weekend. So hats off to the guy. He brought it home in front of his teammate. And that's more than that's more than we expected of the man.
All he wanted to do was finish, and he did, and he wasn't last. So I think that's all you can do.
What was he? Last but one in front of Buemi.
He wasn't last.
I'll tell you something. How bad was Bourdais? If Bourdais finished behind Buemi and the guy who's never sat in a Formula One car finished in front of him, that doesn't make Bourdais look good at all, does it? But moving on, before I get the evils, just a quick shout out also for Nico, who at some point in the future must stand on the podium because he's just working his way up there. Fourth place for Williams, halfway through the season. They're still working on the car. They're still developing it. They don't appear to be making any wrong moves. They have a car that works at every single track. I love it. Williams are doing really, really well. Quite impressed with that. And also to Timo Glock, who I thought he was battling with Nico through part of the race, and I thought he did a really good job in that Toyota. They had a good strategy. They filled him long. The first stint seemed to go on forever. The biggest fuel tank in the grid, surely. So Timo Glock, great drive from him and from Nico too. Fantasy Racers.
In fifth place, Rhino F1 team with 7856. Fourth is Brontastic with 8160. Third, Demigods of Aeons, 8403. Second, Celtic Racing with 8764. And first, Couch Potato with 9638. I had a terrible week in fantasy races this week.
So did I. The worst possible. Tell me who you had.
Well, I had Massa. Now, obviously, that didn't work out well at all, but you couldn't have predicted that. Him.
Nope.
Vettel.
Oh, dear.
Who retired. Alonso. Kimi. Who retired.
Oh, no.
I had Rosberg and Button, who both did okay, but not excellent.
I did have Sutil, who, what did he last? A lap? Then went out and did another lap?
Yeah.
That was terrible, and I had Alonso.
Ugh.
Oh, dear. So where does that leave you now?
I'm 107th, so I've fallen miles, and you are 349th.
I see. Oh.
It's just going from bad to worse, really.
I noticed Kathy had a good weekend.
Yeah. The interesting thing...
Predictably.
So Journey has just pointed out that actually Couch Potato will break the 10,000 points barrier
no
at
way.
Valencia, because she's got 9638 at the moment.
We've got to have a word with Danny.
Sort that out, please.
Goodness me.
The interesting thing is... as we've mentioned before, Kathy has got so high because she buys and sells all the time, constantly during the race,
yep,
keeping an eye on what's going on. And this week, I almost sort of did the same thing.
You were adjusting your fantasy racers teams during the race.
Well, in the comments, I think it was Lou said, should I sell Massa? And someone said yes. And I thought, yeah, I really should too, because the chances are he's not going to be back.
You know,
for a while.
You should have been doing this in Melbourne, don't you?
I really should have started this a lot earlier.
A little bit late to get into this game.
Yeah. Keith the Marshall has pointed out that he's ninth. And
go,
Ollie, Keith. Ollie says, you're 349th. His worst team is catching you quickly.
He has five teams. And the team that is the lowest scoring team, yep, is about to overtake me.
Yeah.
I'm really trying hard to beat Ollie as well. Every week I really put some thought into it. Every week I've fallen backwards since I started trying.
Chris says, I've gone up 30 to 981. I'm rubbish at this, aren't I?
Did you start late, Chris? Or that is quite rubbish.
We had some... You know how we've been doing these sort of team catch-up things,
yep,
where people submit how well they've done.
You got some more of them?
So I've got some more of them. Stephen Roy says, team victory or bust, had a very poor race. The team was badly let down by a farcical pit stop that cost Fernando Alonso his best result of the season, and by Jenson Button making a stupid tyre choice. The biggest letdown, though, was Sebastian Vettel parking his car to play with his little brother's radio-controlled Enzo. Lewis Hamilton delivered a great win for the team and was ably backed up by Timo Glock. So he had highs and lows there. Mm. Lou says, Honda's helping hand scored a total of 428 points today. We'll certainly have to have a few meetings to discuss driver contracts and performance. In all, not our best result, but we've had worse.
Okay.
Giannia says, it was a mixed day for Scuderia Milmilia in Hungary. The bad news, the team slipped a few spots to 100th. The good news, the team is now ahead of Side Podcast Racers, who have slipped to 107th. Thanks for that, Giannia. With a four-week break upcoming, the team will now rest and see if a change in strategy is needed for the last seven races.
Understood.
And finally, Guile says, a disastrous weekend for Rosso Corse after Massa's crash in qualifying and poor races by Alonso, Heidfeld and Barrichello. However, the team direction wants to assure everybody that we back our drivers 100%, and it will decide only the week before Valencia its replacement for Massa. Leaving the car free as a tribute to him is also a possibility. At the moment, our thoughts are with him and his family, and we expect to see him well and ready to race soon.
In the comments, Stephen has pointed out that we are hammering Autosport.
Excellent.
And to which Kathy replied, you're welcome. apparently, what are we? We're first with 566 teams compared to Autosport's rather small 108. We have 8,564 points and they have 8,001 points. We are miles ahead.
That's very, very good. So the other thing I wanted to say was, Chris sent me an email. That's Chris with a K. And it says, when preparing everything this evening, you might want to look at the Fantasy Racers driver selection stats, which are quite interesting. The one that makes me giggle is that more people picked Bourdais than picked Piquet this weekend. and that still remains true even after people have seen that he's vanished on the telly. Another interesting but useless fact is that just 10 people picked Jaime for his first race, which has to be something of a disappointment for him. However, at the time of writing, one extra person must have been really impressed and has already picked him for next race.
Goodness me. I would say that the guy was overpriced at the start of...
Did he just pick up Bourdais' price?
Is that what happened?
I don't know.
We should probably find out from Danny what went on. But he started off with an incredibly high price for a guy who had never...
Bourdais wouldn't have had a high price, would he?
I don't know. The guy's never turned left or right, and suddenly he comes in with a price that I just couldn't justify without seeing him on track.
I was just going to say, the one thing I would say about people still having Bourdais, I imagine I've got him in one of my other teams that I never look at.
Right,
So that might be the reason.
But you, so you haven't even bothered to try and remove him from that
team? I have multiple teams and I only ever look at one of them, so...
Fair enough. Are the other ones control? Is that intentional? You're going to see how they do. Right. That makes some sense then. So because it's a control team, you're just sticking with Bonnet.
In the comments, RG said he's one of those 10 people that picked Timey and he suddenly feels quite significant.
Wow.
That's good. Well
he
done.
He really is.
Kathy's just updated us saying that Jaime started with the same price as the other Toro Rosso drivers did at the beginning of the season.
That makes sense. Thank you, Kathy.
A couple of emails this week. My first one is from Peter. He says, "Hi, Christine. I've been listening to the show for over a year now, always a fan of the regular show, and I wish I had more time to follow you live in the Parade Lap and in some of the other shows you put out. Miniseries are great. Thanks for tidying up the omnibus." Someone else noticed.
Yay.
"I listen to your podcast while I build my straw bale house near Melbourne."
What?
"I'm a novice builder, but the steady stream of F1 info keeps me going."
Didn't the Big Bad Wolf tell you about building houses out of straw?
I wonder if there aren't other podcasts about building that might be more useful. I don't know, but we appreciate that. He said, "I just looked with horror at my calendar to see that after Hungary, we have a 4-week wait for the next race, and then it's Valencia. Do my eyes deceive me?"
Nope.
What an insult.
Yep.
How depressing. Mm. "I'll have to pull out some old videos from 2003 or something to keep me going. How will you guys cope? We'll have to make some news or start some rumours. Hang on, you already do that."
Hey.
Peter.
What?
I don't think we do.
I'll tell you what we're going to be doing. We're going to be doing SidePod Radio.
Yes,
that's
we are.
That's our answer to the 4-week break.
We'll be talking about SidePod Radio in a minute. I've got another email from Brett. He says, "Hi, discovered your blog podcast in April, then promptly forgot about it."
Thanks.
Charming. "Just rediscovered it and have listened to all the side podcasts since then in one go and loved them. Looking forward to the next one." That is crazy talk.
Redeemed yourself.
Why would
there,
you
Brett?
Do that? "What's going on with all the aero? At the end of last year, the cars all looked fantastic, with vanes, barge boards and things sticking out everywhere. At the start of this year, they looked very plain, and it was explained that this was due to the rule changes. However, the cars are again sprouting the cool alien-looking things. The rules haven't changed, so what is going on? Is it a case of one team tries a little vane, and then the others try one slightly bigger, etc., like schoolboys trying to find the rule limit? Blah, 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 blah. Keep up the good work, Brett." I think you might have been channeling Barrichello there.
Yes. Well, it's a massive failure on the part of the regulations, which I think we've talked about in the past. Basically, the cars were made fugly in order to allow overtaking into or to increase overtaking. And that hasn't happened. And these little things that are sprouting up. I did notice Toyota had an additional mini wing inside of their main rear wing.
Really?
Which looked at, it's like an extension of the, you know where the rear light and rear crash structure is?
Yeah.
Like a little upside down U pointing out on top of that. It looks completely ridiculous. You've got Force India with a secondary mini wing inside the shelf of the major wing. You've got all sorts of new little appendages appearing, which is exactly what the rules were designed to remove, and Brett is entirely correct, and it hasn't helped overtaking, as we saw today. Regulations completely failed in every respect. There was a talk, you know, the Alonso thing you quoted earlier on today when he said that he was fed up with Formula One and the rules were rubbish. He also went on to say in that interview that, you know, the little flap, the adjustable flap at the front of the car, never used it, he said. Nine races...
You
never
can,
used
you
it.
You can adjust it by 6 degrees or whatever. He
twice
hasn't used it, doesn't know why.
Doesn't care. Doesn't. Well, he does know why. It doesn't blooming work. Ugh. It's rubbish. It's a terrible design. It doesn't make any difference.
I guess it's more work to do it than to not do it. The benefit is
well,
not
it's just,
enough.
It's pointless. It doesn't make any difference. It probably confuses them. It probably unsettles the car. It's completely pointless. I think Ian Phillips said on Radio 5 Live on Friday that he asked his team what was going on with the adjustable flaps, and his team said, "Well, we don't use it either." So nobody is using these adjustable wings. They don't make any difference. It's a complete and unmitigated failure on the part of the people, the overtaking working group and the FIA, who basically put these rules into place. We've got fugly cars, we've got no overtaking, and nobody seems to care.
Actually, until Alonso had said it, I'd forgotten that they could even do that with the front wing.
I'm not surprised. Well, the thing is, they never gave back to the viewing audience what status the front wing was at. They never fed back that information. You can't see them. You can't see them moving on television. It doesn't help overtaking. It doesn't make the slightest bit of difference. I recall one radio conversation, I think, with PK when they asked him to move it. And that was it. And we talked about it on the show, and that was the only reference, I think.
It was the highlight of the year in terms of that.
Yeah, it was the only reference anyone's made to it, and it's a complete waste of space.
Bring back the Dumbo Flugel, that's what I say.
Dumbo Flugels rule.
I've had another email, and this one is on the subject of Danica, because we seem to have an ongoing debate over whether she should be in Formula One or not.
Okay, what does this email say?
This is from Jarrett. He says, "I started listening to Sidepodcast early this year and I've been really enjoying it. I used to follow kart racing many years ago when Alex Zanardi was on top of the world. I decided this year would be my return to racing as a fan and started looking for F1 info and found Sidepodcast on iTunes. So far, so good."
Trying to pick a bad year to start, in fairness,
yeah.
Jarrett.
The last podcast I listened to, you made mention of the USF1 team and its high-profile prospective driver, Danica. I, for one, am not a fan. She spends more effort running her mouth than she does on the track. My biggest problem with her is how she uses her gender as a tool for her advancement. All in all, she is just a pretty pile of fluff. To me, I would think she would want people to recognise her as a proper race car driver over the current female driver. The only way to change that is to shut her mouth, race, and succeed. As far as women drivers go, I have far more respect for Sarah Fisher, who seems to be far more grounded in her approach to racing. I just wished Sarah could receive a fraction of Danica's budget. Thank you for all you guys do, and keep up the good work, Jarrett in Connecticut.
You can say Connecticut now.
I can. I struggled with that earlier.
I'm so impressed.
I apologise. It seems a bit harsh on Danica. But I do
a pretty pile of fluff.
Yeah,
but I think that's harsh. He's just warming up.
I do get the reference though, because I've never heard of Sarah Fisher. So
you've never heard of Sarah Fisher?
No.
Oh, I should have mentioned her because I'm following her on Twitter.
Ah, there you go.
Oops, that might be a failure on my part rather than anything else. She's very good. I think Midweek Motorsport are a fan of Miss Sarah Fisher, and they encouraged us or me at least to follow her on Twitter. I am, however, also following Danica. So, and you know, I can't really decide between the two. I do think that it would be good to have Danica in Formula One. And although she may use her assets to further her pockets.
Careful now.
Yes, in terms of income and sponsorship. I don't think she really does that in terms of racing. As far as I understand, when she's on track, she's quite feisty and she does appear to want to race rather than just to run around at the back and pocket as much cash as she can.
This email came from Guile immediately after the race.
Go for
so
it.
Up to the minute feedback. He says, what a race. I think one of the best of the championship so far. I know there wasn't much overtaking, but there was the feeling during the first stint that anybody from Alonso to Rosberg had a shot for the win. With so many teams with good pace, it's a perfect set for the second half of the championship. An amazing comeback for McLaren and Lewis, and that's saying a lot coming from me. Kimi finds some of his lost speed, and I wonder if Massa could have won it. Weber positions himself as my best bet for champion in a close final at Abu Dhabi. Rosberg climbs on my driver's scale with a solid fourth. Button, damage limitation, but in that condition, he will lose the championship. Regards, Guile from Argentina.
Makes a good point. Button cannot continue to decline in the way he's been doing so. It's been another race and it's been a poor showing.
But he is doing the best he can with what he's got.
He is.
My final bit of feedback is from Lane, who actually messaged me on Facebook. He says, Lane here from Vancouver, Canada. Went to a historics race and put up some pictures from the event on Dropio. Hopefully people enjoy them more than pictures of food, snow and what is being consumed at a pub.
What? Yes. What's wrong with our Dropio?
Dropio isn't always about
Formula
1.
What are you saying?
Could you put a shout out to the side podcast listeners to put some local race meet photos up? Next week's homework, possibly. Really like to see what the listeners are going out to see on the weekends. We do try and encourage that. We absolutely like photos.
That's a good point. And Keith Marshall is in the comments. And he's a man who goes to a lot of local race meetings because obviously he marshals them. So we'll pass that on to everybody in the comments, and especially to Keith.
He continues, I have a picture of Alex Zanardi when he crashed out of the Vancouver Indy as he was walking away. The last race he would do so as he lost his legs at the next race in Germany. I'll post it sometime this week. I still really love the show. Hope you and Mr. C keep at it. And then he carries on and says, cocktail dress and fancy suit, maybe not to see Stirling Moss and pay $100, which relates to what we talked about last week.
Oh, yes.
But you should have an end of season awards with a side podcast twist. Now we do this. We've done that for the last 2 years.
Side poddies.
Side poddy awards. But he's got some suggestions. He said best mispronunciation on live TV of side podcast. That would be good. Longest answer Joe has ever given.
Oh,
which is also a good one. Most ice creams Kimi has consumed in one race. Worst first lap luck. And his suggestions are Heikki or Kubica. Most camera time during the season, and his suggestions are Anthony Hamilton, Nicole Scherzinger, PK frowning, or Christian Horner looking nervous. He says, thanks for all your hard work. It's a fantastic show, Lane.
That's brilliant. Love every single word of that. I have seen the pictures on Dropio, and they're really good. We'll put a link in the show notes if nobody's caught them already. They're sort of underneath all the food stuffs and the beer.
And the snow.
Yep. But thank you for that. And we'll definitely add those to the awards. I think we should start an awards wiki now.
Yep.
I think that should happen right away because they are some great suggestions. And the side poddies will return in 2009 as they do every year.
Housekeeping.
Hi, my name's Ben Gribbin. If you're enjoying Side Podcast Radio, why not donate? We're raising money to cover the cost of production and the extra will go to charity. Just visit sidepodcast.com and click the donate button on the right-hand side.
That is awesome. That's from Ben. Now, this is going to take some explaining because I think last week we left it at Sidepod Radio's happening and we don't know what we're doing, but it's going to be great.
But things have moved on.
we have like details and plans. And, it's amazing.
And not only, well, firstly, just to go back to what Ben just said, that's a brilliant little promo. We want more of those promos from everybody. If you haven't got time, or even if you've got your own radio show, whatever your plans are for Sidebar Radio, if you're out of the country, if you're listening in, if you've got your own show, whatever you're doing, we want you to call in with exactly what Ben just did. That was blooming perfect. Just basically to encourage people to donate to Side Podcast to enable Sidepod Radio to happen. And then, obviously, as Ben said, the rest of the money going to a charity. What we want to do is get loads of those sweepers that we can play out during the day.
So probably we should explain what Sidepod Radio is and how it's going to happen.
Yeah, what did you just call it?
Sidepod Radio.
Sidepod Radio. Yeah. Yeah, we should explain that too.
Yeah. So there are two blog posts which will help you, and we'll link to them in the show notes. But basically, on August the 2nd, we are going to do 12 hours of live broadcasting.
Correct.
Although some of the shows may be pre-recorded, but they will go out live on Sunday. We're going from 12 midday till 12 midnight UK time. And the idea is for all the lovely Sidepod community to get involved and give us your half-hour shows.
Now, we're not going to talk... Well, we're going to talk for as little as possible during this. So we're essentially the broadcasters.
Yeah.
You're going to be doing F1 Minute every hour on the hour.
I am the news.
Which is going to be exciting. I'm looking forward to that one. And we've got a whole bunch of ideas, some Formula 1 related, some not Formula 1 related, for guest presenters to come and to produce their own show and to talk live on air on Sidepod Radio.
Some of the submissions we've had already include the Nostradamus Effect, which is an RG show, and he's going to be doing some predictions because his predictions for the races are awesome. He does the whole field, so we think maybe he could cover life.
And we're basically we're hoping for live predictions for that show, I believe.
Yeah, well, so we are encouraging questions or anything you want predicted. Encouraging things like that, you can email them to me, christine@sidepodcast.com.
Good stuff.
Or call 01212887225.
I predict it's going to be a long day.
Yeah, I do too. We've also got Sidepod Space from Stephen Roy because he is our space expert. So he's going to be talking about space for half an hour, and he wants questions about space or if anyone knows any space music that is pod safe.
Ah.
He'd also like that.
Good stuff.
Submitted as well. So again, christine@sidepodcast.com, 01212887225.
Luke's got a comedy show.
Lukey has a comedy show. We've got a potentially got a quiz show. We've got about games. We've got music. We've got a cooking show. There's lots going on.
I'm not looking forward to the cooking show.
The cooking show is you.
The quiz should be ace because there's a head-to-head between Stephen and Journeyer. Looking forward to that one.
Yep. You're doing a cooking show because you're not very good at cooking. I'm doing
hopeless is the word.
I'm doing a film show because I know nothing about films.
You're doing that with Bassano.
I don't know why we end up doing what we're rubbish at.
I wonder if that might be the highlight of the day. I am looking forward to that. The most important thing we have to mention is the ongoing saga, which will be Sidepod Melodrama. And that will that will occur throughout the day. And that's in production at the moment, is it not?
We do have lots of great shows going on, but there are also still some spaces. So if you've got an idea for an F1 show that you'd like to do, you can do it live on August the 2nd, or you can pre-record it. A half-hour show, we've got plenty of space for lots of good
Ben's
things.
Ben's got a show, I see. Ben just left us the voicemail.
Ben left us the voicemail. He's got a show called F1 and Design.
Goodness, what's that about?
I think it may be about web design.
I might be into that show.
Yeah.
I might be tuning into that one. Okay, so I'm going for your film review being the funniest. Actually, Lucas might be the funniest. I'm torn already about which one I want to enjoy the most.
Lukey's is a comedy show. Mine is a serious film review show.
Right.
It won't be funny.
Okay, I can see it being a huge disaster. But yeah, it's going to happen. It's going to happen at 12 p.m. UK time, Sunday the 2nd of August, the start. So that's next weekend.
Yep. The other thing Ben mentioned, and you've said about donations, is for people to donate for us because we are covering our costs and giving the rest to charity. Now, I wanted to do a quick shout out to those who have donated already. We've got Scott, Jackie, Bassano, F1 Wolf, Ben, Amy, Rachel and Alex have all donated money, and we're hoping for lots more so we can get the total over the £120 we need so that the rest can go to charity, and we'll do a poll for which charity it will be, probably a motorsport related one.
Goodness me,
after
that's
the event.
Over half the broadcast already covered in donations.
Yeah, we're almost there to our total.
That's wonderful. So keep them coming. That's brilliant.
I also wanted to give a shout out to Joanne, who donated us some money, and it wasn't for the Sidepod Radio, but it was very generous. So I just wanted to say hi to Joanne and thank you very much. I
haven't seen Joanne in the comments.
No.
Is she new?
I think she must be.
She's a lurker. Joanne, D. Lurk, come say hello.
We're very nice.
But thank you for the donation. Every donation is appreciated, as always.
So I'm not sure we've been very clear on SidePod Radio. It's all still a little bit chaotic. But if you need any more information, the best place to go is the wiki, wiki.sidepodcast.com/page/SidePod Radio.
And there must be people out there who want to do their own show. We're giving you an opportunity here to live out your DJ dreams on SidePod Radio live to the entire world.
But if you're scared of live, you can pre-record as well.
Or pre-record to the whole world. Either way, we'll be happy. It's going to be a long day, isn't it?
It's going to be awfully long for us, but it will be excellent. And I imagine everyone will tune in and be in the live comments, and it will be an excellent day.
Sounds like a brilliant idea and a great way to break up the drudgery of the summer break that the FIA have imposed on us for cost-cutting reasons.